Welcome to the Shaping Portsmouth podcast. Shaping Portsmouth is a collaboration of key Portsmouth businesses, transforming Portsmouth together. So, welcome to another Shaping Portsmouth podcast with me, CEO Dave Humphreys, and today I'm joined by Bev Collins of Frank HR. Welcome, Bev.
Thank you.
How are you?
I'm really good, thank you.
Good, good. So, I think quite a few people will know you around the city anyway. Mm-hmm. But let's go back long before Frank HR. And do you come from Portsmouth originally?
I don't. I'm an Eastleigh girl originally.
Okay.
So I'm not the Southampton side. I don't have an SO postcode. Well, actually, in fact, I do. But yeah, I'm an Eastleigh girl. And many years ago, I worked in Portsmouth. I don't know if you remember, there was a newspaper called Street Life.
Yes, I do.
Yeah. So I think I spent probably about 8 years working in this area. So it's not unfamiliar to me.
Okay. But you've always been Solent region.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
South Coast.
Yes, I have.
So you run your own business, Frank HR. How long have you had Frank HR now?
So 1st of April will be my second year in business. So I'm still fairly new.
Yeah.
And wow, it's been a journey. It's been amazing.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah.
So let's rewind. How did you get to Frank HR? What did your career trajectory look like?
Blimey. So, I mean, if we go way, way back, at a young age, I always wanted to be responsible, to have my own money. So I remember I was about 14. I just did some sweeping in a hairdresser's, and I would go down to the local market and see if I could help the stall owners down there. So that, you know, working for yourself, being accountable, has always been something on my mind. I then went to college. I did a business course. And funnily enough, I came out of there and the first thing I wanted to get into is I applied to be a prison officer.
Wow.
And I know. And I remember coming down to Portsmouth, having an interview, and because of my life experience, it didn't go anywhere.
So was that at Kingston Prison?
It was.
Yeah, wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
I mean, back in the day, it's not here anymore, is
no,
it?
No, it's all,
no,
all flats now. I mean, it's still there, the building, but yeah, it's all flats.
Okay, so
very different.
That was way back. I've worked for Hampshire Probation Service. I worked for Swatch UK.
Right.
And then I got into education.
Okay.
And I spent probably 20, 25 years in education until I set up Frank HR Solutions.
Right. Okay. So what was your role in education?
I was head of HR. I was working for a multi-academy trust. I was at head office and looking after 35 schools.
So
a huge role.
Yeah, yeah. But HR-centred.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. So what made you decide to take the leap and set your own business up rather than work in a big role like that?
It was kind of forced on me, if you like, in a way, because people out there will know that I'm an accredited menopause training partner.
Yeah, yeah.
And part of the reason for leaving where I was because I reached burnout.
Hmm.
And what I didn't realise was that I had been experiencing menopause symptoms for a couple of years. And honestly, Dave, there were times when I would be at work in my role, I'd be in meetings and my mind would just go blank.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, I started getting anxiety. And work were amazing. They were so supportive, hot flushes, all of those things that you would expect to hear about with menopause. But then it got to the stage where I was really worried that I would get found out. I couldn't do my job anymore. And that's how I felt.
Right. Okay.
I was waking up at sort of 4 o'clock in the morning naturally, going into my office next door in the bedroom, and I was starting to work. And that was to try and cover up because I was so much slower than I had been. And I was doing that probably for, blimey, 6 months. Don't know how I managed it. Until one morning, I just literally, I collapsed. I woke up, I was an absolute mess. And I took some time out, I phoned work, I was in tears, they were in tears. And I just said, I can't come back. Well, take some time, Bev, you know, think about it. We want you here.
Yeah.
And I just couldn't do it. So I'm one of those statistics that I have left a really, really good role. I mean, I think I was probably 47, 48 when I went to uni for the first time.
Yeah.
So I was doing that to get my postgrad diploma in HR as well as working full time. So at that age, I was all over it. I was going places. But then it just hit me just like that out of the blue. Everything disappeared. I walked away. I had nothing to go to. Didn't even consider the fact that I wouldn't be able to pay the bills or anything like that. It's just the relief when I made that decision. So I tried on the job market, which was horrendous. I was ghosted by recruitment agency. Honestly, it was hell looking for a role. And then the kids and my partner said to me, look, you've been doing HR forever. Why don't you set your own business up? And I thought, I can't do that. How the hell am I going to? I don't know anything about it. I've spent all my life working for other people. And I kind of poo-pooed it. It got to the stage where I was thinking, blimey, I need to start thinking about bills.
Yeah.
How am I going to pay? And I thought, I'm just going to go for it. So I set the business up, launched it the 1st of April 2000. And where are we now? 2020.
We're 2026 now.
Yeah, 2024. And I haven't looked back. It has just been the best thing ever. And some of the really good things about it is you get the flexibility. But honestly, when people say that there's a work-life balance, there isn't. I mean, what I have learned is that I'm a workaholic and I don't stop. But when you're doing it for yourself, it's different.
Okay. In what way?
Well, I have a choice.
Mm.
I can make those decisions. And I do a lot of work in the community.
Right.
So a lot of my work is unpaid. Some of that is working for charities. Other work that I do is I'm a group leader for a ladies networking group. So I put a lot of time into volunteering and doing things around that. But also, I just can't help myself. People reach out to me now because I've got a bit of a reputation. And if they're having a hard time at work and they're not being treated fairly and they're not getting anywhere with their employer, they reach out to me to help them. And I've taken on some amazing cases where I've supported people. And, you know, if I was working in an organisation, I wouldn't get the opportunity to do those things. So I manage my time, sometimes not brilliantly, because I can't say no. And I feel that I've got this moral obligation to help.
It doesn't stop you being a workaholic. It just... It gives you more choice around where you direct your workaholic.
Yeah.
What's the right word? Yeah, workaholicism.
It really does.
Yeah.
I'm still getting out of bed early. I wake naturally, maybe 5-6 o'clock. I go and work in the office now, but it's completely different.
Yeah.
So I go into the office, I have this routine. First thing I do, I pop downstairs, have a glass of water, sit at my desk. I've got my LED face mask because, know what? If we can just have a little bit of help as we get older, why not? And then I just have, you know, certain routines, certain times of day when I'll have my coffee with MCT oil. And I just absolutely love it. And I would not change it for the world.
Oh, excellent. So you're not the first person I've encountered who's ended up setting up their own business because of a desire to put themselves first.
Mm-hmm.
Do you miss the sort of the previous type of working where you were sort of part of a team, does the freedom that you now have outweigh that?
The freedom does, but I'm a real people person, and the beauty about my role is that I get an opportunity for working
to work with lots of people.
Different variety of people, businesses, but also there was an accountant that I've been working with. We've managed to get them to where they need to be now, which is great, and I just work on higher level stuff. But I was literally going into their office once a week. And that was probably for a good 6 months.
Yeah.
And that meant I was still having that contact with people on a weekly basis, which is great. And of course, when you work from home, we have three dogs. One's just moved out with my son, and I have the two dogs that come up and spend the day with me. So, Yeah. That's all right. Never get lonely.
Yeah, you've got to have dogs.
Oh, yeah.
Was there a point in time where you set your business up and you thought, what am I doing? You know, am I going to get any customers?
Well, the weird thing is, when I left work and I set up Frank HR, that wasn't the intention. You know, there was no intention to do that. So I didn't have any clients. I had no customers. I had no contacts. I had nothing. So literally, my son and I, we spent a whole Sunday putting together a website, which was horrendous. When I look back, it was horrendous. Mm. I spent money on business cards that I didn't need to spend money on. And so you get into this routine where you think, all of a sudden, you look at what you've spent and you're thinking, I didn't need that. I didn't need to spend money on those things, or I could have done them differently or better. But when you first set out, you haven't got a clue what you're doing.
No. And you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
Yeah. It is interesting. We get it all the time when we chat to people coming in on the Portsmouth Business Support Service, and you ask them what support they're after, and then they talk to you about their business, and you look at them and think, that's not the support you need.
No.
And they totally don't realise what they actually need help with. Uh-huh. So how did you find that part of the journey, that having to focus on setting up a business rather than just doing what you're good at, the HR stuff?
It was an issue, you know, and I'll be really honest with you. All of a sudden, you become a management accountant.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, talk to me about figures. This is an area of weakness for me. That goes right over my head. And all of a sudden, I was having to worry about accounts and budgeting. Like I say, the website, my son helped me. I had no knowledge. I really didn't have a clue, even with proposals.
Yeah.
And I didn't know about Canva. I didn't know about MailerLite. And these are things that I've been using more recently. And it does come back to, you know, if you set up in business, you need all the help you can get. And the biggest thing for me, Dave, I would say, in my success was when I started at the beginning, I started networking.
Yeah.
And I couldn't believe how lovely and supportive people were in the community. And they lift you, they support you, they give to you, they don't expect anything back in return. And I suppose that's one of my, you were talking about this on the radio yesterday, I think, give to gain?
Yeah.
And because people have been so kind and they've helped me, I think that's where I get this passion to help others.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I really, really appreciate what people have done for me.
Mm. And obviously, that was kind of the route how we met you, because I haven't yet mentioned that you are shaping Portsmouth's HR department.
I am.
And I was actually looking for someone to help us with HR, and Joe Morgan recommended, where most good recommendations come from, actually. Jo Morgan recommended you and introduced you to me. And then you came in and started working with us at Shaping Portsmouth.
Yeah.
So in terms of your business, Frank HR, how does that work? Because people will potentially be used to working, say, for a company that has got an HR department.
Yeah.
How does it work with you as a self-employed HR person?
So I have the clients that I work with are completely different. So it might start out with somebody who is looking to employ their first person, and they want to get that right from the start. And even if you employ just one person, there are rules and regulations that you have to follow.
Yep.
You can't get away from it. But a lot of people don't realise that. I then work with people similar to Shaping Portsmouth, where that's on a retainer basis. I also go in and support businesses. I mean, at the moment, I'm working for a large organisation as an independent investigator.
Mm-hmm.
And that's brilliant because that's right up my street. I really love investigations. And I also support larger teams in HR with project work. Mm-hmm. So I've done 2P work, restructures for large organisations. So really it's anything to do with people. But if you were to ask me what I enjoy the most, it probably would be investigations. And also, I mean, something that I've done for Shaping Portsmouth is to look at HR across the board, celebrate the areas where things are going brilliantly and where there are gaps. Then I come to you with a recommendation to say, I've spotted this gap. Here's the risk. This is what we need to do. And we put that into action. So they are the things really that I love more than anything.
Yeah. So I think for us, people will probably be familiar with retained HR services. They're sort of kicking around all over the place. You can buy into a big national retained service and get lots of template policies and phone advice when you need it. But you're a little bit different.
I am.
Because we haven't been hit with a load of template policies. You're bespoking everything that you've produced to us as an organisation.
Yeah.
And you come in and work in the office with the team. They all know you.
Mm-hmm.
You've done sexual harassment training with
the team.
Yes, I've
forgotten about that, yeah.
Also, you're there when I need you, in person, not for phone advice.
And that's the way I don't ever want to change that. The level of service that I offer.
Yeah.
When you think about those large organisations, how cold it must be. And I've spoken to a couple of businesses who their HR support is one of those large organisations. And it's so impersonal. Mm. And, you know, I love the fact that any of your team can pick up the phone to me and say, Bev, I've got a personal issue.
Yeah.
Okay, let's meet for coffee. How many HR providers do you get that with? And you don't. So, yeah, my service is different. It's very personal. And also, you know, if you're putting policies out there, and you know, Dave, I'm all about employer of choice.
Yeah.
So anything we do is to make sure I am here. Ultimately, I'm here to protect you and the business. But also, what is really important and really key is that your people are protected as well and they're happy. And there are a lot of businesses who just think, well, you know, I'm a business. I need to make sure that I'm okay. And if we get things wrong, it's okay. It isn't okay. Your people are your most valuable asset. So I'm all about making sure that you are protected, that the risk is sorted, that you are able to grow, but your people are doing really well as well and they grow with you.
So when you first started working with us, the first thing you did was an HR audit.
Yes.
That you alluded to earlier.
Yeah.
And you gave me this kind of recommendation of where the gaps were, what we had
in place.
I know,
and you thought, oh my
and
God, look how big that is.
A very detailed plan around what we needed to do that was then put in priority orders.
Yeah.
And I must admit that surprised me a little bit, mainly because I was just expecting to get hit with a whole, just like, here you go, here's all the policies you need in one email. There they all are, template policies. But no, you work through it in order of priority, one at a time, and did every little bit. But the one theme that kept running through everything was this employer of choice phrase.
Yes.
So explain that a little bit more. When you talk about employer of choice, what do you mean?
That's an organisation that people would talk about, that they would recommend. They would say, work here, it's brilliant. It's a place where people feel valued, where they have a voice, and where they know that management have their back. And, you know, coming into Shaping Portsmouth, and I know the team, and the team are brilliant, and you are a proper team, a team that cares for each other. And that's the kind of, when I'm talking about employer of choice, that's what I'm trying to get across.
Yeah.
It goes beyond what you just see, those surface levels. So it is about the policies. So, for example, things that we've been working on with your statutory policies and time off, let's say, for paternity, parental leave, Shaping Portsmouth go above and beyond what the statutory is. You don't have to, but that is part of your journey to becoming an employer of choice, where you stand out, you are different.
Yeah, yeah. And it's interesting looking at everything from that direction rather from maybe a compliance direction.
Yeah.
But actually looking at, you know, actually what can we do? What is the right thing to do? What is the best thing to do?
Yeah.
And some of the little add-ins you can put in, as we found out, don't cost you anything.
No, they don't.
They're really easy to do. And, and actually, when you look at it, often morally right.
Mm-hmm.
So
you've got to get the right balance, getting a combination between the risk, the compliance, but also never forget your people. Mm. Take your people with you on that journey. Mm.
So you mentioned earlier that the minute you employ one person, there are things you need to do.
Yeah.
And clearly there are tipping points. There's a point in time where you've got a certain number of people and health and safety kicks in a different way.
Yeah.
But in terms of that, and I dare say you're probably in much this position yourself, but in terms of that small business, they've gone out, they've started their business, they're having some success, and they now want to grow and bring in their first employee or a couple of employees. What sort of things should they be thinking about and looking at that stage?
So from an HR perspective, you must issue a contract on day one or before. Mm. That is law. And small businesses just don't know that. You've also got to do right to work checks, because if you employ somebody, even if you didn't know, but you take them on and they don't have the right to work in the UK, you can be, I mean, the fine, I think at the moment, I can't remember off the top of my head whether it's 40 or 60 grand. Mm. You know, there's potential. This is menopause brain kicking in now.
Yeah.
Thank you back.
Well, I remember, and I'm talking a while back now, but I remember doing a bit of work up in Waterlooville.
Right.
In the police, in partnership with immigration.
Okay.
And we went into a number of premises. We found lots of illegal employees.
Uh-huh.
And they can issue on-the-spot fixed penalty tickets, which are obviously at a reduced level to the court fine. That's what an on-the-spot ticket does. They were £10,000 tickets.
It's
on
it's
the
loopy.
Spot. I mean, that's big money.
Yeah.
And that would kill a small business.
Well, it does. It can wipe small businesses out. And last year, they were targeting, the government were targeting smaller businesses.
Yeah.
More things like your nail bars, your car cleaning businesses, things like that. But as a business owner, you have to, you know, you can't say I didn't know. That won't cut.
No.
You have to know what you're doing. So you also, policies, for example, you've got to give, you've got to issue disciplinary and grievance. If you employ five or more people, you've got to have a written health and safety policy.
Yeah.
So essential things you have to do.
So contracts, most people will know what a contract is. Contracts, so obviously law that you've got to have one, but what they actually say and how they're worded, pretty crucial as well.
Yeah.
And I think the line is something like, you know, you never need a contract until the moment you need it.
Absolutely.
And then you do.
Yeah.
Really need it. So that's you know, obviously things with the wording. The right to work, though, how does that work? If you, what would a business need to do to comply with that right to work piece?
So right to work, it's just, this can be really simple. Mm. So you can go onto the government website and you can pop the information in about that employer and it will tell you instantly if they have a right to work. The way I suggest people do it is just for that extra security and that risk and that compliance element is to have a form or a spreadsheet where you ask the people to come in, you see, this is really important, you see their original documentation and you, from there on, you just, the checks are so simple, and it just means that you are safe. That risk is removed, because if somebody comes along, and even if you say, well, I did the check, and they say, well, they don't have the right to work in the UK, but what you looked at is a photocopy that had been played around with, you know, again, but businesses don't know that. They don't realise that they've got to look at those little things like the originals that will keep them out of trouble. Yeah.
And you mentioned health and safety there. And obviously there's a tipping point. How many employees?
Five
employees. So at that point, there are a number of things you have to do. But that's just one area of kind of compliance.
Yeah.
You've also got things like data protection, safeguarding, etc. So
it
from
goes on.
An HR professional's perspective, where does HR actually stop? Do you find yourself having to look at GDPR for clients or safeguarding
of,
or
all of those things? And obviously with my history in education, I completely understand safeguarding and I know how crucial that is. So that's a big thing that I have behind me. So many things you have to do, like, and something that I suppose generally isn't, business continuity plan.
Yep.
I've written one recently.
Yep.
And it's not generally something that HR would do, but it involves people. And I know it's something that a lot of businesses wouldn't consider. They wouldn't even know what one is.
So on that note then, what is one?
So a business continuity plan, it's basically if something goes wrong in the organisation, there might be a cyber issue, there might be a massive data protection breach, the CEO may become poorly, there may be a bomb threat, anything like that. It's about having a plan in place so everybody knows what their responsibility is and how they deal with that situation to make sure the business still functions.
Yep.
So if you are, for example, providing, let's just say you were an accountant and you were looking after businesses and doing their payroll, that's going to be one of your priorities to make sure that if something happens to your business, you know, how are you going to deal with payroll? How are you going to make sure people are being paid? So whilst it's not technically HR, I do those extra bit. Again, this is where I'm different. I bring those extra bits in because I'm about compliance and risk and making sure that your business is protected.
So, yeah, it's a role that can be as big as you want to make
it.
So I mentioned there about businesses growing and employing your first employee. There's surely a point here where you're going to run out of capacity and Frank HR is going to need to grow a bit. How much do you kind of think about that, plan for that? How much is that on your mind? Because I get the impression, just from talking to you about all the stuff you're doing and what I see on social media, that you're probably quite busy now.
Yeah, you could say that. I'm pretty busy. I'm in a fortunate situation where I have Angela, who joined me back last year. She's a senior HR consultant. So I'm in a really good position that I have Angela working with me. If things become too much, I just pick up the phone, send her an email, and she'll pick that up. I'm also working with, I've got some VAs, I've got some coaches. So through my networking, everybody that I've met through business, I have people that I can reach out to that I've vetted. So when I'm dealing with people, it isn't just somebody that I've met and we talk about, well, let's work together. I actually know them. And I think that is crucial, because if I'm recommending a business and saying, right, I've got somebody that I want to come in and work to take my place, but they'll do this for you. I have to feel really confident that they're going to do a good job.
Because they are Frank HR then, aren't they?
They are. They're representing me.
They're representing you. And it's, the impact of that is crucial.
And so, that's difficult to let go of, I have to admit, because you set your business up. This is all about your reputation. And that's quite scary. It's pretty scary.
No, I can imagine. So there's been a lot in terms of HR legislation talked about recently. I think one of the biggest and most obvious is the sexual harassment legislation, which I mentioned earlier because you've done the training for us. That's something that I think has changed twice. I think it was done in stages, wasn't it? There was a need to do sort of everything reasonable to prevent it, and then it got even tighter, didn't it?
And it's going to get tighter in October as well. So what I'll do at that point is I will come into Shaping Portsmouth and, as we did before, but give you an update. And it's really important that, again, you know, you have a responsibility as a business to understand what you have to do. You're not an expert in HR. I mean, like me with accountancy, I'm not an expert. But the expectation is, I can't just say, I didn't know.
Yeah.
So therefore, I'm not at risk. I'm not compliant. But it's those kind of things that, as an HR consultant, I have my little diary back at home in the office, and I make sure that when law changes, you get the best out of that. The idea, what I do is to remove the pressure from you as a business, so you don't have to worry about these things. And you want to be able to sleep at night.
Yeah, definitely. but so that particular piece of legislation, there are a couple of areas that on, I suppose, first glance to a business look a little bit woolly. One is the fact that you're, as an employer, the limit of your responsibility doesn't seem to end at any point. It's the, you know, someone out in the public domain, if they're employed by you, could be sexually harassed by a random member of the public that they happen across, and that would appear to be on you as an employer. The second one is, the legislation doesn't give you a list, like health and safety. Mm-hmm. There's very clear things you have to put in place at that five employer point. Mm-hmm. But for the sexual harassment stuff, it just says you have to take all reasonable measures, which is very, like, what does that mean? And so what do businesses have to do to comply with that sort of legislation and protect their employees?
And this is a really tricky one. So what I would suggest people do, and this is part of something I offer with my retainers, is that I provide a sexual harassment toolkit.
Right.
And that toolkit is a bespoke action plan for that particular business, bespoke risk assessments. And everything in there is about making sure, again, about the word compliant and risk-free. But it's so crucial, and it's so easy. If you don't know and your staff don't know, they could be putting themselves in situations where they can really come unstuck. And it is, you know, you need to make sure that you are protecting your staff from third parties as well. Yeah. How do you do that? So if you have a risk assessment and you have an action plan in place, it's so much easier to define what that might look like and to make sure you have things in place to protect people. So remember, it's about taking all those reasonable steps. There are going to be some things that just aren't in your remit, and you know, but it's one of those things that you deal with as that arises. But if you are giving your staff training, you've got your menopause, again, it's on my brain, you've got the sexual harassment toolkit and action plan in place, you know, you can't go far wrong.
Yeah. I mean, that for me, when we first went through it, that kind of risk assessment and action plan seemed to be the two crucial elements. And it's probably very hard to justify that you've done everything that's reasonable if you haven't even done a risk assessment. That kind of jumped out as a starting point, I guess.
Yeah.
So clearly a lot going on, doing very, very well with the business. I want to kind of go back to where we started and how you got to setting HR, Frank HR up.
Yeah.
Because of what was going on with you personally and the impact menopause was having on you and your own well-being and, you know, a business that's stemmed out of putting yourself first. How do you now, with all the pressures of being a small business owner,
yeah,
and the demand and everything else. How do you look after yourself now? What do you do differently, if yeah. anything, to make sure you don't end up back in the same position you did when you were employed?
There are a couple of rules that we have at home.
Right.
And that is that there will be a certain time where my partner will come upstairs with a cup of tea and he'll say, right, it's time to finish now. And he's doing that from a really, really lovely place, a loving, caring place. I make sure that I go out throughout the day, especially in the summer. And at the moment, I've been doing it already. I don't know why, but something pops into my head. I need to take a break. And I just simply walk up and down the garden. And I look at the plants, and I look at the buds growing, and it just does something. Just being outside, even for a few minutes. I've got the grandchildren.
Yeah.
So I have the grandchildren over. You have the dogs. You take the dogs on a short, you know, walk. And a non-negotiable for me is once a month, I have a massage and a reflexology session. Yeah. That is the only time when I sleep, dribble and snore all at the same time. I go into a deep trance and it is just the most wonderful thing. But I think, you know, going through what I did previously with menopause, I was able to give back because I'm now an accredited training partner. So I've got those skills and those tips to help me to deal with any symptoms, because even though you go through menopause, which is only one day, by the way, it's one day.
Right.
Those symptoms don't go.
No.
Some of them do. And for some people, they go after a period of time.
Yeah.
But you still get, I mean, what does go is the hot flushes.
Mm.
But you still get the brain fog. You still get the anxiety. There are times when you think, where did I put the keys? And you find weird things in the fridge. Mm. It's like being pregnant again. So I'm in a position now where I can think about my well-being and I understand what's going on. Whereas before, it was really scary. When you don't know what's going on, how can you work around that?
Yeah.
So in terms of my own well-being, I think I've got a pretty good setup. But fresh air and walking is... Oh my goodness, it is just the most incredible thing that you can do for yourself and for free.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. So I'm not going to ask you what weird things you found in your fridge when you were pregnant. although that did jump out as a potential question. But instead, I want to ask about the menopause work.
Yeah.
And being an accredited trainer, because... I'm kind of sensing that you've got enough going on with all of the Frank HR stuff without layering another little project on the side of it. But I'm intrigued to find out what that involves. What do you do? Where do you do it?
Yeah, so I'm an accredited menopause training partner for Hormones on the Blink.
Yeah.
So I don't know if you've heard of Sophie Cartilage.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant. She's got such a creative mind.
Yeah.
She set Hormones on the Blink up, and she was looking for training partners because she's so passionate about getting the word out. So I thought, with my history, I was in a really good position to train to be a training partner, but also because I've got that real lived experience. And honestly, if you've not been through the menopause, you really, really don't understand how demoralizing, how crippling it can be. I mean, some women hate them. They just sail through it and they don't even know that they've had the menopause. They've been through it, which is, my goodness. But for some women, it is horrific. And of course, the impact that has on families, colleagues, partners. So we're talking about menopause and the brain fog. I've blown forgot the question.
The question is what do you do as an accredited trainer?
And right.
Yeah,
so,
I was trying to find out more about
that. Thank you. So the training is literally to go into businesses, and it's to raise awareness, it's to talk to their staff, it's to talk to their managers and management as well. So it's to deliver that. But where I'm different, again, I like to be different, with the HR side, I'm the person that will be writing up the menopause action plans and the risk assessments. Similar to sexual harassment, menopause looks different in every setting. So if you work in a prison, or you are a teacher, or you work in a school, you know, they're all going to be different in how that action plan looks for that particular business. So I work with businesses to prepare their action plans, or I will be.
Yep.
Government guidance has just come out again. So I've spent a good few days, I would say, working on an audit, like similar to the HR health review, where I can go in, talk to businesses, find out what's going on. So that's rewriting their policies, also preparing people for difficult conversations.
Yep.
And putting together resource hubs. So that might be training trainers and saying, right, here's a ton of documents that you can use. So it's not just a case of training. It's so much more than that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And we're doing a little bit of work at the moment, actually, about it's a completely different area of subject matter around climate change.
Okay.
And increasing temperatures and how that impacts on different sections of the community, from businesses to education to vulnerable.
Yeah.
And in fact, we've just put a survey out on this week's newsletter that the University of Portsmouth are currently doing about how did the particularly hot summer last year affect businesses.
Right.
And in all the conversations around that, I haven't actually heard menopause mentioned, but there's an obvious link there in that especially as we prepare for increasing temperature rises, that has an impact on employees that are going through the menopause in
goodness,
their workplace.
Yeah, absolutely. And the law, of course, is changing. So from April 26, it's voluntary.
Right.
And from 2027, it's compulsory for businesses with 250 employees or more. They must have a published menopause action plan in place.
Right. Okay.
So that will probably affect organisations like the university, because no doubt they have more than 250 employees.
Yeah.
But that's not to exclude smaller businesses, because the government will be sending out guidance as well. And for anybody, going back to the employer of choice, for anybody looking for a job, I know that if I was looking for a job and there were two businesses very similar, but one said menopause friendly, I know which, you know, it stands to reason, doesn't it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Wow, interesting stuff.
Yeah.
So you've clearly got a lot on your plate.
Yes.
Very, very busy lady.
Yeah.
But before we finish, we always like to end by focusing in on Portsmouth.
Okay.
And the city. And I like to ask people to make a recommendation of somewhere to go or something to do in Portsmouth. So have you got any thoughts on where you might recommend?
Yeah, I know, you know, all the normal stuff, and there's so much to do around Portsmouth, but somewhere that I stumbled across a few weeks ago, and it was during the I can't remember which week it was. Anyway, it was the the Boathouse Kitchen.
Okay.
Boathouse Kitchen in the historic dockyard.
Right. Yeah.
That was the International Women's Day.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
It was fantastic.
Yeah.
And you're in a lovely little area anyway. You've got the dockyard there. You've got everything around you. But there's just the most incredible vibe about the area that we were in. And the biggest cinnamon buns, you would not believe. They were gorgeous.
Yes. I did see pictures of, in fact, it was Sarah Rhodes from SLR Recruitment eating a cinnamon bun, thinking, wow, that is a huge bun.
It was huge.
Yes.
I got caught out. I had some on my chin and I'm supposed to be dieting, and I got caught out. But anyway.
Wow. I did,
lovely place.
I regretted not being available for that one once I saw the cinnamon buns. But,
we had a great day there, and I would highly recommend that. Lovely place to go to.
Yes. So, and in fact, there was... in fact, it was my recommendation on the end of my podcast a few weeks ago, was the Portsmouth Historic Quarter, because there are so many things in there that people don't know about.
Yeah.
And the people don't realise that it's segmented. So you've got the Mary Rose Museum, the National Museum of the Royal Navy and Portsmouth Historic Quarter as the landlords who run a lot of the stuff, and that you can get in there for free on a Portsmouth Historic Quarter pass
without having
to pay to go into the National Museum of the Royal Navy Museums, Victory or the Mary Rose. Mm-hmm. And that enables you to do things like Boathouse 4 and the She Sees exhibition and various other things. And I know one of the things that they've got coming up through the summer is once a month, the pontoon days, where there's different themes around the boats.
Right, so, interesting.
Good one for people to look out at. And I think the first one in April is steamed themed.
Okay.
So they're going to have, as well as steam boats, there's going to be steam fairground rides and traction engines and things. So great little free weekends for people.
Yeah.
But there is a number of different eateries dotted around Portsmouth Historic Quarter. But yeah.
And parking is great, isn't it?
Yeah.
I didn't even realise there was a huge car park around that area as well.
Just up the road in Queen Street. Yeah. Yeah. So cinnamon buns. Portsmouth Historic Quarter.
Yeah,
that's the thing. Boathouse Kitchen. Brilliant. Well, thank you very much for talking to us, and
thanks for inviting me.
Everything you do with RHR and looking after myself and the team.
Oh, you're all so easy to work with. Thank you.
And it's been great chatting to you in a podcast.
Lovely.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Dave.
This podcast was brought to you by Shaping Portsmouth, working to make Portsmouth the number one UK city in which to invest, live, learn, work and visit. To find out more, please visit shapingportsmouth.co.uk. This podcast was supported by Spark Community Space and Portsmouth Community Lottery.